The sales robots have taken over, and they're decimating deals left and right, destroying them right in their tracks. On the AI for Sales podcast, our mission is to empower everyday sellers to embrace AI superpowers to build new bridges and crush quota. Dr. Joel Aban said it best in the AI for Sales book, "In sales, time kills deals. In AI for Sales, AI kills time." Join our hosts as we learn from the C-suite of the world's fastest growing companies about how you can leverage AI today to transform your sales revenue engine while being the best version of you.
Hey everybody, Chad Burmeister, and I'm your host of the AI for Sales podcast. Today we're with Jonathan Spear. He is the CEO of Rev. It's getrev.ai, and it's a cool platform, I've got to tell you. We all have a challenge getting to prospects. And if you look at the latest and greatest surveys that are out there, 77% of sellers say the hardest part of their job is getting a first meeting. And if you've been listening to the show for any time at all, or you know me for the last several decades, that's exactly what I love to do. So you're going to be speaking my language today, Jonathan. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Chad. I can tell we're already on the same page. That's great.
Yeah, before we hit the record button, you said something that was pretty intriguing to me, and you called it the first mile of sales. And I think a lot of people talk about the last mile and closing and objection handling and coaching and all that in the funnel stuff. But if you don't get the prospect in the funnel in the first place, then what value is it?
Right? Oh, that's it. You know, we call it the first mile problem because you can, you know, we do, you know, we get so good at working the funnel and this and the selling process and every bit of even nurturing now and getting folks through the funnel. But really, who you're talking to makes all the difference in the end. You want to talk to people who fit your ICP and are going to be great customers when you finally reach them. And the flip side, gosh, we've all had the experience too of letting the wrong people into the funnel, and they just sit there and they suck time and cycles, and that's no fun, no good for anyone.
They wreak havoc on your time. It's funny, I was just thinking about that because this year we pivoted to doing sales, not just lead generation and not just technology. So now we're staffing teams. And I just literally, before we walked into this call, thought, my revenue per hour is 10x what it was a year ago. And you know, why shouldn't I be spending time on more higher value type opportunities? So makes a ton of sense. Well, let's rewind the tape, Jonathan. I'd like to help our audience connect to who you are as a person. By asking the question, you're in Menlo Park now. Were you always there? Did you grow up in California? You know, what was your thing when you were younger, when you were a kid?
Gosh, I'm a California boy. I grew up in San Diego, which has been a lot of fun because Rev is back there. And I've worked up here in the Bay Area now where I live now with my family. But it's been a lot of fun getting to go back to San Diego where I came from.
That's excellent. My first memories of San Diego was when the Broncos made it to the Super Bowl way back when, and I couldn't afford a ticket because it was $1,200. So I went to the parking lot in San Diego when the Broncos played whoever it is they played back then.
Oh boy. I knew when I said San Diego, I was worried you'd start talking about sports because it's a painful set of memories of the San Diego fan. We've had our couple good years with our Padres and Chargers, but it's been a while.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well,
if
the San Diego Californian were to knock on the door right now and walk in and say, "Jonathan, bud, good to see you again," what do you think younger Jonathan would say about what's going on in the AI world and kind of what you're up to today?
You know, that's such a funny question. You never know where life goes. Who knew that I'd end up here? But I'll tell you, I was kind of one of those. Kind of a weird generation, those folks after the Gen X and before the millennials, where we came of age with technology, you know, sort of young enough to remember dial-up modems and the crazy sounds they made and 1200 baud connections into other computers. And so it's been amazing watching how technology has changed so many different parts of our lives. And I think, if nothing else, I would have told myself probably just follow that natural curiosity, stick with that. It's just, it always was and still remains such an exciting place to be in our world is here in the intersection of technology and business.
Yeah, well, AI has ability to have such a huge impact that people I talk to on the show, whether they're in biotech, transportation. It doesn't really matter. There's so many ways to deploy the tech. Let's dig into that a little bit. So when I go to your website, getrev.ai, the first thing I see, a new way to prospect. Lookalikes don't always buy alike. AI takes you beyond intent and firmographics to find more prospects and ID missed opportunities automatically. And I think of when I joined Riverbed in San Francisco Bay Area years and years ago, and the SVP of sales said, Chad, look, we win 78% of our opportunities. Your job coming in to build out this inside sales team is to get us into the ops because we'll win them. And I find that's a pretty prevalent problem, is that they're just not getting the at-bats. So talk to us a little bit about how do you do that? What role does AI play in finding lookalikes?
Yeah, there's a few things. You know, B2B sales over the years has specialized more and more. You know, we've gotten better at and put systems around and dedicated teams around closing deals. And we've got, you know, our nurturing function set up in marketing. And now more and more often we have people who are the dedicated BDR, SDR function opening doors. But the reality is the tool set really hasn't evolved much in 20 or 25 years with regard to how we do prospecting. And when I first met Rev, so Rev's been going for about 8 years, but I'm the new CEO. I got here last year. And when I first met the company, I was so excited, kind of like you're saying, because I have the same history, right? It's so important that you can bang down doors and get into accounts, but in this space that hasn't seen any real change. And AI is so interesting because at the end of the day, what AI really shines out, if you take away all the hype and can get, I think, blown out of proportion in some ways. But what I think what AI is amazing at is pattern matching. And if you think about it, finding your next best customer really is just a really sophisticated, really important pattern matching job. It says, can we go out and find people who look like and buy like our very best customers? And it turns out that our technology can really help do that with AI.
Well, it reminds me, I just posted two different jobs for different customers for an account executive role. And I changed the entire job description and the requirements for the role. And I was like, okay, I'm so excited. This job platform, it's going to have some intelligent AI and it's going to serve up people that are a perfect fit. And I was so disappointed. I was like, wait a second. Why didn't it read this? And it's serving up a director of someone. What it prioritized was the wrong thing. Colorado. It's a remote job. I don't care where they are. So, and here's the thing. I posted two jobs. Both of them served up the exact same people and they're completely different AE roles. So it's what I'm finding with AI is that if you don't have a sophisticated team to put the algorithm in place in the first place, then you're just going to accelerate bad decision making. And there's a big need for ethics involved in this conversation as well, right? I think a new CEO needs to emerge over the course of the coming years called a chief ethics officer related to overseeing these kinds of algorithms that get deployed. So how do you avoid the problem that I just saw that says, you know, I got people that are in Colorado and I really don't care. In fact, maybe I don't even want people in Colorado.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I'll tell you the way we look at it is that AI is fundamentally this pattern matching technology needs to be an enabler of really smart people to help them continue to be really smart a little faster or a lot faster. And I look at it and say, you know, of all the examples of brilliant AI, the one that I like the most that I use, you know, 52 times a week is Google Maps. You know, it's incredibly sophisticated how Google Maps will find you a route from point A to point B. It's taking into account, you know, all kinds of speeds and feeds and signals and traffic and routes and construction and, you know, all these variables. But at the end of the day, the user doesn't need to care about all that sophistication, but they also at the same time have a lot of control. So at really, I think just the right level, Google Maps puts the user in control of some really important variables. How are you going to get there? What time do you want to leave? And gives you some routes and lets you as the user make the decisions. And that's really the model we've used with our AI. You know, when I'm talking about pattern match, I could be more specific for sales. What the pattern matching in sales is about fit for your ideal customer profile, your ICP. And we actually have a funny name we use. We call it an AICP, an AI customer profile that we help a customer build. But that's not some black box that just does it and here you go, here are your answers, which I think leads to the kind of frustration you saw in that job search.
That's right.
It's got to be something where we help the customer build a model of who their ICP is, let them choose, like in a Google Maps kind of way, the variables they really care about. And then we find it gets results that are really spot on for what they need. That makes sense?
I think of RingCentral when we had a pretty intelligent Harvard grad strategic business guy that led strategy for the company. He came from Salesforce and he moved over. And at first I was like, who is this guy coming in here? And then after about a week, I discovered, oh yeah, he knows what he's talking about. And he had 100 columns in this algorithm that they built. And now he said, look, I probably really only need 6 or 8 of these because those are the most important levers. But we might as well use the other ones because we have them. And, you know, one of those, for example, when you're selling a RingCentral phone system, if you're a manufacturer, you might only need 10% of the company has a need for phones. If you're a business services company, it might be 98%. So just that one column alone to say, hey, this company has 1,000 employees, but it's treat it like a 100 employee company. And that company with 1,000 employees, treat it like a 998 company. That one simple thing that a VP of sales may look at it and go, man, why are you working with all these companies with 500 employees? Well, because they all need phones. I'd rather have those than the 10 percenters. And those are what people need to look at.
Oh, there's so much there to unpack. And you said it just right. Now, think about RingCentral, like a lot of kinds of companies in tech, is they can serve lots of industries. And that's great because you can build great big companies that add all kinds of value for all kinds of segments. But it's also a challenge because if you can sell to anyone, well, where do you go next? You know, what should be the priority? And how do you synchronize that priority across all your go-to-market functions so you have, you know, wood behind the right arrows and really maximum impact on a market? And the normal filters that companies use, if they don't have something better, you know, that idea of headcount, like you're talking about, just firmographics, what industry, what headcount, it's just not enough to decide, you know, what's a good prospect from a bad prospect. Like you said, there are much better criteria when you know your market, but you also need a system to help you assimilate all that data and find those patterns a lot faster in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Well, and now let's pivot into the actual person. So there's a lot of companies who say, well, director of IT, call center operations person, you know, there's a lot of different roles that could be the right buyer. Or I'm working with a company that sells to principals, assistant principals, and then a whole bunch of other titles. There's new AI technology that could be one of the feeds into yours, like Codebreaker technologies. They sit on top of LinkedIn, just like Crystal knows, and they read the person's personality, and you can API that information in to say, hey, this person, they call it a bank code, blueprint, analytics, N is for nurture, K is for knowledge. And depending on the ordering of those, the buyer will behave very differently. So sure, it might be an 80-20 rule. A SVP of sales in the Bay Area, your likelihood is that they're they're going to be a driver and they're precisely who you want to talk to. But wouldn't it be valuable to know that don't put the 20% in that are not the kind of SVPs of sales that I should be reaching out to?
Yeah, you just save time when you do. And like you said, you know, good smart people can come in and recognize some of those patterns on their own. But your best customers likely share some things that you know, maybe you know what they are. Maybe there's some other patterns in that data that can be surfaced to really help you get there faster.
Yeah.
It's powerful and valuable stuff.
Well, I'm excited because LinkedIn at one point had something to do with lookalikes. And so, you know, there's always one or two out of a team of 100 that find something and they're able to kind of figure out a manual workaround to do something with that information. But to scale something like that was always difficult. So I'm very happy to hear that Rev has figured that equation out. If AI didn't exist, does the company even exist, or do you just have hundreds of people doing things very manually, or how does that work?
I honestly think if AI didn't exist, then there's, you know, there's not a possibility here. You know, this, I mentioned this part of the funnel has been the same for a long time. You know, it's been 20, 25 years. We generally have all prospected and opened doors the same way. And I think, you know, there are two things that are new. I mean, for sure, the technology stack has gotten more mature beneath us. And we all love these tools, the outreach, the sales engagement tools, and the nurturing. And that for sure helps because it creates the data store to draw from. But again, without that pattern matching of AI, it's still on people to kind of guess. And that hit and miss kind of guesswork process, I think AI is a game changer in this space the way it is in so many others.
Talk to me about intent versus finding the right people, because I just attended the B2B MX conference in Phoenix, I don't know, a month, 2 months ago. And it was the first in-person event there for a while with this group. And all the marketers were talking about intent data, but I've seen and been part of a few implementations, and there's not a lot of standard deviations above from person A to person B to person C. Well, this person showed intent. Okay, so what? You're either too late to the party as a salesperson, or it's not the right person that's the right buyer. They can't match that. There's so many missing pieces of intent data. As a leader and a salesperson, I'd rather know who's the person and what's the right company that could ever have a need to buy our stuff. And then let me talk to that person before there's intent, right? Is that what you're finding, or what do you think of intent?
Oh, you really got it. I mean, but first of all, congrats on going to an in-person event. I mean, what was that like? I don't even remember what that's like.
It was about a third the size of a normal event. And the opening speaker was the former CEO of Marketo. And he said, you know, I'm from the Bay Area and I'm a little nervous to be here, but I'm here and I'm excited to be here. So I think the valve's open and people are now out and about. So it's kind of nice.
That's great. Well, yeah, I think you're spot on with how you're talking about it. You know, intent's a great technology. It's fantastic to find those people who are in the buying motion already. And we all, I think, have come to accept, you know, the buyer journey of awareness to intent, to consideration, to purchase, to advocacy. And I'm a huge fan of that technology. And I'm, you know, friends with people at Demandbase and all over the place and support those companies. We look at ourselves as like a sister technology. We're one slice over, because, you know, in a way, if you have so much inbound interest, if you have that much intent that you don't need any more prospecting, your whole funnel's full, right? Then first of all, congratulations, give your marketing department a huge raise. That's amazing. But frankly, you know, when we talk to companies, we almost never hear that. Sales teams say, we love the intent. It's great when there's inbounds. It's great when they're high intent, you know, inbound, but we still have to fill all the rest of our funnel. And at that point, you don't want to go from, you know, the high fidelity signal, a great intent signal, all the way to guesswork. There's got to be something in the middle. And what that is we call it fit and readiness, right? Number one, do the people you're going after, when you're doing your outbound motion, do they fit your ICP? Fundamentally, are they worth talking to or not? Because of some important things, are they an early adopter? Are they showing the right growth characteristics in the right departments? You know, do they think and execute the same way? And then second, we talk about readiness. You know, are there signals that you can get from a company in the way they're hiring and the way they're talking about their products and other kinds of things that tell you maybe now they'd be more open to engaging with you than they would have been last month or 3 months ago? So we see it very complementary and very necessary for the sales team. That, by the way, all of our customers use intent. We're the next step over up the funnel.
Yeah, got it. That makes perfect sense. What about other technologies that you're seeing? We just talked about intent as a as another, like you said, sister parallel kind of a track. Are there anything that you've seen this year that you say, whoa, that is going to change the game for sellers?
You know, we're fans of AI and analytics, you know, and data, you know, throughout the funnel. I'm certainly impressed by companies that are doing a good idea, like Collective Eye, of helping you get a good handle on what's going on in your sales funnel. And so those are the technologies I'm watching most. It's kind of other uses of AI for other parts of the funnel.
Yeah, that's interesting. I just heard Kevin Dorsey speak at an event in Dallas. So I was at another one last week, by the way, and at UTD, UT Dallas. And he showed a screen full of 20 or 30 different levers. And he said, if you're not measuring all these things, then you don't know where, you know, cycle time, speed to lead, like just so many different things that you could look at. And when you can deploy AI and say, look, rep A's closing at 46%, rep B's closing at 17%, it took me about a year because I staffed a team of about 8 people. I was closing everything before 42% close rate. Then I bring on a diluted, you know, and I'll call it founderitis. I'll happily wear that title because it's never the same as yourself, right? But there's a rep that did 38%. There's a rep that did 37%. And then it went down to a quick 8 or 10. And if you just let that go forever, you know, either number one, improve that rep's behavior in the certain areas. Maybe they're not prospecting enough. Maybe their sales call's going awry. Or you just have to replace that person at times. And having the altimeter to tell you where things are going awry is just so important in today's selling environment.
Such a huge advantage. You know, when you can see first, you know, see something before it happens, you know, like you say, there's all kinds of things it could be. It could be your training program, could be some materials weren't used right. You know, there's all these things. I think the opportunity of AI is to see more really good patterns earlier. Which, you know, in that case helps you get your reps more productive. That's fantastic. In our case, it's see who's a good person to purchase before they even know to show intent yet.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's where AI is just super exciting, I think, for the sales process.
Well, it makes me think of the Matrix movie where they're looking at the screen of zeros and ones, and Neo is the only one who can see remember, the girl in the red dress, and they're like, oh, what? You can see the woman in the red dress? Yeah, because he's seeing the pattern in the zeros and ones. And that's what, with the new AI technologies, it lets us be Neo and look for that person that's different than everybody else.
Chad, I don't think anything I've ever done in my life have I been compared to anything in the Matrix movies. I feel super cool now.
Yeah, we're going to call you Neo on the new slide deck.
I don't know if you're talking about me or all of us using this technology. It's fine if it's all of us, but even being near that, I just feel cooler than I did when I got on the call. Thank you.
Well, I used to have the Iron Man picture in the background, but it was too small for this new office that I have. So talk to me about where you think AI for sales is headed. You know, one person on the show talked about you go to a McDonald's drive-thru and they're rolling this out nationwide where you won't talk to a person anymore. You'll pull up, it's geocoded. Hey, Jonathan, welcome back. Would you like your normal Big Mac and fries? And is your wife with you today? How about your kids? Like, that's where things are going. And you talk to the AI, it needs to be able to be at the edge AI so that it knows how to respond instantly and doesn't have to wait for a 10-second upload on the 1200 baud modem. But knowing that all that's going on at the edge at a McDonald's drive-thru and then the things you're doing, where does this all end up in 5 or 10 years? I mean, do we even need people anymore at that point?
You know, yes, we do, right? And sales is still a human-to-human action, a whole lot of the time. If you're educating people about what you do, there's no better way to do that than a great and well-trained sales rep. But you know what the part that I really focus on is the way AI enables people. And I do think, you know, for us, that's the game. Like I said, if you can make people faster, help them see the patterns earlier, faster. And in particular, you know, we call our technology exographics, all this stuff I've been alluding to, these different patterns that we find about your prospects. It really comes down to exographics, which are essentially data about how the prospect, how your target company executes its mission. And where we see that going initially, the kinds of things I've talked about are they hiring or growing a certain way? Do they have early adopters or not on their team? Now, all those different factors. I think where it is going to go is much more real time. Because companies are changing all the time. And it's amazing how much information is now available about those real-time changes. And that could be reflected in financial statements, could be reflected in hiring or job postings, or in a thousand other signals that end up, you know, out there in the universe. And so I think where all this goes is just making all of us faster. And, you know, I'm super excited about it, but to me, that's it. It's everyone getting smarter faster by having access to patterns that really, really help them do their jobs.
Well, I'd love to see, as a buyer of a lot of technologies, the grinding of the gears, talking to certain salespeople, it's still a 90%, 95%. I'm unsatisfied when I walk out of a call. And if the AI could help people reach out to me because they think, hey, you're a $2 million a year run rate company going on five. You've got this many employees. We know you as a person. We know the other people on your team. You've deployed LinkedIn Navigator and some other technologies, and then come to me with that knowledge and information, right? And then even align the right type of rep with the right personality to me as a buyer. Man, if we could get to a 70% out of 100 seller-buyer relationship, I'd be very satisfied.
Look, we've all had the experience of having fantastic calls with sales reps, right? As buyers, right? You have a call and you're just like, wow, this guy is great. Like, he gets what I'm trying to do. He understands. He cares about my problem in a genuine way. Like, you know, is there to educate me, right? And support my buying process, right? It's the big difference between that and the really annoying call, the opposite call from that one, is how relevant it is to the real problem, how well it fits, you know, who you are. And occasionally, you know, just how great that rep is. But, you know, I think that the opportunity is there, like you're saying, to really unlock more of those real positive interactions.
Yep. So last question, Jonathan, and I'm going to tweak it from what I sent you in advance. So you may not be prepared for this one, but it'll be close. A lot of people for the last 10, 15 years, so a lot of the millennial generation hasn't been through a recession or a downturn. I believe the writing's on the wall that we may be heading into one of those, and there's some analysts who are saying we're already in it. So knowing that and how AI can make a team so much more productive, I guess, what advice would you give to a VP of sales, but then also what advice would you give to a regular account executive who's finding themselves, man, I don't know, I might have to look for new work right now. You know, think of it from those two angles, that we may be headed into a recession right now.
You know, I say this a little tongue in cheek because I'm a voracious reader of the news and all that. But, you know, one of the pieces of advice is read the news less. Our economy goes through cycles. The up cycles are more fun than the down cycles. But the reality is that the cycles are a part of things. It's just going to keep happening. And the lesson that you need in the downturn is to be really disciplined about understanding the value you create as a product or service in the marketplace, and help, you know, it matters a little bit, you know, at that point to show people how you create efficiency, how you save money a little more than in the growth cycle where you talk about how you make money, create new opportunity. So maybe your messaging changes a little bit. But actually, the discipline that's required in the downturn is probably super healthy, and then helps you again the next time things swing up. And a lot of terrific companies were started in the downturns, because those are the companies that actually have some of that real discipline and know how to communicate and get their messages across and create real value.
Great advice. I think I'd heard Topo, Craig Rosenberg, talk about that once. And he said more multimillionaires were made in 2008 and 2009 in the last downturn than ever. So you're right. Read the news less. Focus on the value you can provide. and be a good person.
Be a good person, and it's going to work out, you know. Not to diminish, it can be, you know, some things can be hard on people, and things happen. But I'd say focus on where you add value, and you know, things can work out real well too.
Yeah. Well, amazing conversation. I can't wait to dig more into. And funny enough, at the bottom of your site, be in good company. So be a good person, be a good company. It's perfect. Google, Salesforce, IBM. I mean, these are the who's who in sales marketing, and they're using Rev to fill their pipeline. So this is very exciting technology. If you haven't looked into it, do it. GetRev.ai. Jonathan Spear, pleasure talking with you today. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Chad. My pleasure.
All right, everybody. We'll catch you on the next AI for Sales podcast.
Hey, you made it this far in your AI for Sales journey. Want to augment your sales growth? First, leave us a review and then visit www.scalex.ai to claim your free strategy session today.